The Awakened Mage, Kingmaker Kingbreaker, Book 2, by Karen Miller. Narrated by Kirby Hayborn. Copyright 2006 by Karen Miller. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Orbit, an imprint of Hachette Book Group USA Incorporated, and was produced in the year 2010 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Part 1. Chapter 1. With one calloused hand shading his eyes, Asher stood on the tower's sandstone steps and watched the touring carriage with its royal cargo and Master Magician Derm bowl down the driveway, sweep around the bend in the road, and disappear from sight. Then he heaved a rib-creaking sigh, turned on his heel, and marched back inside. Darren and Willa weren't about, so he left a note saying where Gar had gone, and continued on his way. The trouble with princes, he decided, as he thudded up the spiral staircase, was they could go gallivanting off on picnics in the countryside whenever the fancy struck, and nobody could stop them. They could say, "Oh, look, the sun is shining, the birds are singing, who cares about responsibilities today? I think I'll go romp amongst the bluebells for an hour or three, tra-la, tra-la." And the trouble with working for princes, he added to himself as he pushed his study door open and stared in heart-sinking dismay at the piles of letters, memorandums, and schedules that hadn't magically disappeared from his desk while he was gone, damn it, was that you never got to share in that kind of careless luxury. Some poor fool had to care about those merrily abandoned responsibilities, and just now, that poor fool went by the name of Asher. With a gusty sigh, he kicked the door shut, slid reluctantly into his chair, and got back to work. Acridly drowning in Meister Glossbottle's pestilent piss problems, he didn't notice time passing as the day's light drained slowly from the sky. He didn't even realize he was no longer alone in his office until a hand pressed his shoulder and a voice said, "Asher, are you dreamstruck? What's her name?" Startled, he dropped his pen and spun about in the chair. "Matt, you daft blot! You trying to give me a heart spasm?"
"No, I'm trying to get your attention," said Matt.
He was half grinning, half concerned.
"I knocked and knocked till I bruised my knuckles, and then I called your name. Twice. What's so important it's turned you deaf?"
"Urine," he said sourly. "You got any?" Matt blinked.
"Well, no. Not on me. Not as such."
"Then you're no bloody use. You might as well push off." The thing he liked best about Matt was the Stablemeister's reassuring aura of unflappability. A man could be as persnickety as he liked, and all Matt would ever do was smile, the way he was smiling now.
"And if I ask why you're in such desperate need of urine, will I be sorry?"
Suddenly aware of stiff muscles and a looming headache, Asher shoved his chair back and stomped around his office. Ha! His cage.
"Probably. I know I bloody am. Urine's for getting rid of into the nearest chamber pot, not for hoarding like a miser with gold."
Matt was looking bemused.
"Since when did you have the urge to hoard urine?"
"Since never. It's bloody indigo gloss bottles got the urge, not me."
"I know or regret asking this, but how in Borrell's name could any man have a shortage of urine?"
"By being too clever for his own damned good, that's how." He propped himself on the windowsill, scowling. "Indigo Glossbottle fancies himself something of an artiste, you see. Good old-fashioned cloth dyeing like his dad did, and his dad's dad afore him, that ain't good enough for Meister Indigo Glossbottle.
No, Meister Indigo Glossbottle's got to go and think up new ways of dyeing cloth and wool and such like, ain't he?"
"Well," said Matt, being fair,
"you can't blame the man for trying to improve his business."
"Yes, I can," he retorted. "When him improving his business turns into me losing precious sleep over another man's urine,
You'd better bloody believe I can.
Viciously mimicking, he screwed up his face into Indigo Glossbottle's permanently piss-strangled expression and fluted his voice in imitation.
Oh, Meister Asher, the blues are so blue and the reds are so red. My customers can't get enough of them, but it's all in the piddle, you see. Can you believe it? Bloody man can't even bring himself to say piss. He's got to say piddle, like that'll mean it don't stink as much. I need more piddle, Meister Asher. You must find me more piddle. Because the thing is, you see, these precious new ways of his use up twice as much piss as the old ways, don't they? And since he's put all the other guild members' noses out of joint with his fancy secret dyeing recipe, they've pulled strings to make sure he can't get all the urine he needs. Now he reckons the only way he's going to meet demand is by going door to door with a bucket in one hand and a bottle in the other saying, "Excuse me, sir and madam, would you care to make a donation?" And for some strange reason, he ain't too keen on that idea. Matt gave a whoop of laughter and collapsed against the nearest bit of empty wall. Asher!
Despite his irritation, Asher felt his own lips twitch. I suppose I'd be laughing too if the fool hadn't gone and made his problem my problem. But he has, so I ain't much in the mood for feeling amused just now. Matt sobered.
I'm sorry. It all sounds very vexing.
It's worse than that, he said, shuddering. If I can't get Glossbottle and the Guild to reach terms, the whole mess'll end up in Justice Hall. Garl'll skin me alive if that happens. He's got hisself so caught up in his magic, the last thing he wants is trouble at Justice Hall. Last thing I want is trouble at Justice Hall, 'cause the way he's been lately, he'll bloody tell me to take care of it. Me! Sitting in that gold chair in front of all those folk passing judgment like I know what I'm on about. I never signed up for Justice Hall. That's Gar's job. And the sooner he remembers that and forgets all this magic codswallop, the happier I'll be. The smile faded from Matt's face.
What if he can't forget? Or doesn't want to? He's the king's firstborn son and he's found his magic, Asher. Everything's different now. You know that.
Asher scowled. Aye, he knew it. But that didn't mean he had to like it, or think about it over much either. Damn it, he wasn't even supposed to be here. He was supposed to be down south on the coast, arguing with Da over the best fishing boat to buy, and plotting how to outsell his sinking brothers 3-1. Dorina was meant to be a fast-fading memory by now. But that dream was dead, and so was Da. Both smashed to pieces in a storm of ill luck. And he was stuck here in the city, in the tower, in his unwanted life as Asher, the bloody acting Olkin administrator, stuck with Indigo bloody Glossbottle and his stinking bloody piss problems. He met Matt's concerned gaze with a truculent defiance.
Different for him, but not for me. He pays me, Matt. He don't own me. No, but in truth, Asher, the way things stand for you now, where else could you go?
Matt's tentative question stabbed like a knife.
Anywhere I bloody like. My brothers don't own me any more than God does. I'm back here for now, not for good. Zeth or no Zeth, I were born a fisherman and I'll die one like my dad did afore me. I hope you do, Asher, Matt said softly. There are worse ways to die, I think.
Then he shook himself free of melancholy.
Now, speaking of His Highness, do you know where he is? We've a meeting planned, but I can't find him.
Did you look in his office, his library? Matt huffed, exasperated.
I looked everywhere.
Ask Darren. When it comes to Gar, the old fart's got eyes in the back of his head.
Darren's out, but Willer's here, the pompous little weasel, and he hasn't seen His Highness either. He said something about a picnic.
Asher shifted on the windowsill and looked outside. Late afternoon sunshine gilded the trees' autumn-bronzed leaves and glinted off the stable's rooftops.
That was hours ago. The cats still be at the Eyrie. They didn't have that much food with them, and it only takes 5 minutes to admire the view. After that, it's just sitting around, making small talk and pretending Fane don't hate Gar's guts, ain't it? Probably they went straight back to the palace and he's locked himself up in the magic room with Derm and forgotten all about you.
No, I'm afraid he hasn't.
Darren. Pale and self-contained, he stood in the open doorway. Nothing untoward showed in his face, but Asher felt a needle of fright prick him between the ribs. He exchanged glances with Matt and slid off the windowsill.
What? He said roughly. What are you wittering on about now?
I am not wittering, Darren replied. I've just come back from business at the palace. The royal family and the master magician are not there. Their carriage has yet to return. Again, Asher glanced out of the window into the rapidly cooling afternoon.
Are you sure?
Darren's lips thinned.
Perfectly.
Another needle prick, sharper this time.
So what are you saying? You saying they got lost between here and Salbert's Eyrie?
Darren's hands were behind his black velvet back. Something in the set of his shoulders suggested they were clutched tightly together.
I am saying nothing. I am asking if you can think of a reason why the carriage's return might have been so severely delayed. His Majesty was expected for a public park committee meeting an hour ago. There was some surprise at his absence.
Asher bit off a curse.
Don't tell me you ran around bleating about the carriage being delayed. You know what those old biddies are like, Darren. They'll...
Of course I didn't. I'm old, but not yet addled, said Darren. I informed the committee that His Majesty had been detained with Prince Gar and the Master Magician in matters of a magical nature. They happily accepted the explanation. The meeting continued without further disruption, and I returned here immediately.
Grudgingly, Asher gave a nod of approval.
Good. And now I'll ask you again, said Darren, unimpressed by the approval. Can you think of any reason why the carriage hasn't yet returned?
The needle was stabbing quick and hard now, in time with his pounding heart.
Could be a wheel came off, held him up.
Darren snorted.
Any one of them could fix that in a matter of moments with a spell.
He's right, said Matt.
Lame horse, then. A stone in the shoe or a twisted fetlock.
Matt shook his head.
His Highness would have ridden the other one back here to get a replacement.
You're being ridiculous, Asher, said Darren, clutching at exceedingly flimsy straws. So I shall say aloud what we all know we're thinking. There's been an accident. Accident, my arse, he snapped. You're guessing and guessing wrong, I'll bet you anything you like. What kind of an accident could they have trotting to Salbert's Eyrie and back, eh? We're talking about all the most powerful magicians in the kingdom sitting side by side in the same bloody carriage. There ain't an accident in the world that could touch 'em.
Very well, said Darren. The only other explanation, then, is not an accident.
It took Asher a moment to realize what he meant.
What? Don't be daft! As if anybody would, as if there were even a reason, you silly old fool! Flapping your lips like laundry on a line. They're late, is all. Got themselves sidetracked. Decided to go sightseeing further on from the Eyrie and got all carried away. You'll see. Gar'll be bouncing up the staircase any minute now. You'll see.
There was a moment of held breaths, as all three of them waited for the sound of eager tapping boot heels and a charming royal apology. Silence.
Look, Asher, said Matt, smiling uneasily, you're most likely right. But to put Darren's mind at rest, why don't you and I ride out to the Eyrie? Chances are we'll meet them on their way back, and they'll have a good old laugh at us for worrying.
An excellent suggestion, said Darren. I was about to make it myself. Go now, and if, when, you do encounter them,
One of you ride back here immediately, so I may send messages to the palace in case tactless tongues are still wagging.
Scowling, Asher nodded. He didn't know which was worse, Darren being right, or the needle of fright, now lodged so hard and deep in his flesh, he could barely breathe.
Well? Demanded Darren. He sounded almost shrill. Why are you both still standing there like tree stumps? Go!
20 minutes later, they were cantering in circumspect silence along the road that led to Salbert's Eyrie. The day's slow dying cast long shadows before them.
There's a sign for the Eyrie,
shouted Matt, jerking his chin as they pounded by.
It's getting late, Asher. We should have met them by now. This is the only road in or out, and the gates at the turnoff were still closed. Surely the king would have left them open if they'd gone on somewhere else from here.
Maybe,
Asher shouted back, his cold hands tightened on the reins.
Maybe not. Who can tell with royalty? At least there's no sign of an accident.
So far, said Matt.
They urged their horses onwards with ungentle heels, hearts hammering in time with a dull, hollow drumming of hooves. Swept round a gradual, left-handed bend into a stretch of road dotted either side with trees. Matt pointed.
Barrel save me! There's that!
Aye,
said Asher, and swallowed sudden nausea. Gar, lying half in the road, half on its grassy border, unconscious or dead. As one, he and Matt hauled against their horses' mouths and came to a squealing, grunting, head-tossing halt. Asher threw himself from his saddle and stumbled to Gar's side as Matt grabbed Signet's reins to stop the horse from bolting.
Well?
Blood and dirt and the green smears of crushed grass marked Gar's skin. His clothes, shirt and breeches were torn. The flesh beneath them was torn.
He's alive,
Asher said shakily, fingers pressed to the leaping pulse beneath Gar's jaw. Then he ran unsteady hands over the prince's inert body.
Out cold, though. Could be his collarbones busted. And there's cuts and bruises aplenty, too.
His fingers explored Gar's skull.
Got some bumps on his noggin, but I don't think his skull's cracked.
Flesh and bone eel,
said Matt, and dragged a shirt sleeve across his wet face.
Braise Borrel is not dead.
Aye,
said Asher, and took a moment, just a moment, to breathe. When he could, he looked up, struggled for lightness.
Bloody Darren, he'll be bleating, I told you so, for a month of Barrel's days now.
Matt didn't laugh, didn't even smile.
If the prince is here,
he said grimly, his horseman's hands white-knuckled.
Then where are the others?
Their eyes met, dreading answers.
Reckon we best find out, said Asher.
He shrugged off his jacket, folded it and settled Gar's head gently back to the cushioned ground, tried to arrange his left arm more comfortably, mindful of the hurt shoulder.
He'll be right, by and by. Let's go.
Remounting, he jogged knee to knee with Matt round the next sweeping bend, battled fear and a mounting sense of dread. Signet pinned his ears back, sensing trouble. They found Derm next, sprawled in the middle of the road, as unconscious as Gar, but in an even bloodier and broken condition.
Busted his arm and his leg,
said Asher, feeling ill as he ran his hands over Derm's limbs. The master magician's body was like a wet sack filled with smashed crockery.
Damn!
Make that both legs. There be bits of bone sticking out everywhere, and his head's laid open like a boiled egg for breakfast. It's a miracle he ain't leaked out all his blood like a bucket with a hole in it.
Matt swallowed.
But he's alive.
For now,
said Asher, and got wearily to his feet, looked further down the road for the first time, and felt the world tilt around him.
What?
Said Matt, startled.
The Eyrie,
he whispered, pointing.
and had to steady himself against Signet's solid shoulder. Not even approaching dusk could hide it. The splintered gap in the timber fence at the edge of the eyrie, wide enough for a carriage to gallop straight through. Matt shook his head.
"Bor'll save us. They can't have."
Asher didn't want to believe it either. Sick fear made him more brutal than Matt deserved.
"Then where's the carriage? The horses? The family?"
"No. No, they can't have,"
Matt insisted. He sounded years younger and close to tears.
"I reckon they did,"
Asher replied, numb, and dropped his reins. Obedient, resigned, Signet lowered his head and tugged at the grass verge, bit jangling. Asher broke into a ragged run towards the edge of the lookout.
"Don't," said Matt. "We're losing the light, you fool. It's too dangerous."
The voice of reason had no place here. He heard Matt curse and slid off his own horse, shout after him.
"Asher, for the love of Bor'l, stay back. If they are down there, we can't help them. If they went over the eyrie, they're dead for sure. Asher, are you listening?"
Heedless, he flung himself to the ground and peered over the drop.
"I can see something. Maybe a wheel. It's hard to say. At any rate, there's a kind of ledge sticking out."
He wriggled backwards and sat up, stared at Matt.
"I don't reckon they went all the way to the bottom. I'm going down there."
Appalled, Matt grabbed his shoulders, tried to drag him to his feet.
"You can't!"
He wrenched himself free and stood. "Get back to the tower, Matt. Tell Darren. Get help. We need pothers, wagons, ropes, light." Matt stared.
"I'm not leaving you alone here to do Bor'l knows what kind of craziness."
"Damn it, what was wrong with the man? Couldn't he see?"
"You got to, Matt," he insisted.
"Like you say, we're losing the light. If they are down there and they ain't all dead, we can't wait till morning to find out. They'd never last the night."
"You think anyone could survive this?"
"There's only one way to find out. Now what say you stop wasting time, eh? Might be they are all dead down there, but we got living folk hurt up here, and I don't know how long that maggoty old derm's going to keep breathing without a good pother to help him. I'll be fine, Matt.
Just go."
Matt's expression was anguished.
"Asher, no. You can't risk yourself. You mustn't. I'll do it."
"You can't. You're near on a foot taller than me and 2 stone heavier at least. I don't know how safe the ground is on the side of that mountain, but a lighter man's got to have a better chance."
Matt just stared at him, begging to be hit.
"Look, you stupid bastard. Every minute we stand here arguing is a minute wasted. Just get on your bloody horse, would you, and ride."
Matt shook his head.
"Asher."
Out of time and patience, he leapt forward and shoved Matt in the chest, hard.
"You need me to make it an order? Fine, it's an order. Go!"
Matt was beaten, and he knew it.
"All right," he said, despairing. "But be careful. I've got Daphne to answer to, remember, and she'll skin me alive if anything happens to you."
"And I'll skin you alive if you don't get out of here," he retorted. "Tie Signet to a tree so he don't follow you. I ain't keen on walking back to the tower."
"Promise me I won't regret this," said Matt, backing away.
His scowl would have turned fresh milk. "See you soon." Matt stopped.
"Asher, sink me. Do I have to throw you on the damned horse No, wait,"
Matt said, holding up his hands.
"Wait! What about Matcher?"
He lowered his fists.
"What about him?"
"He's got a family. They'll worry, start a fuss."
Damn, Matt was right. "Stall 'em. Send a lad with a message to say he's got hisself delayed at the palace. That should hold his wife till we can—"
"You mean lie to her?" "Asher, I can't."
"Bor'l bloody save him from decent men."
"You have to.
We got to keep this as secret as we can for as long as we can, Matt. Think, if we don't keep her fooled for the next little while.
All right, said Matt. I'll take care of it. I'll lie.
His face twisted as though he tasted something bitter. Almost to himself, he added,
I'm getting good at it.
There wasn't time to puzzle out what he meant.
Hurry, Matt. Please.
He watched his friend run back to the horses, anchored Signet to a sturdy sapling, then vault into his own saddle. The urgent hoofbeats retreating echoed round the valley. Then, under a dusking sky lavished lavender in crimson and gold, Asher eased himself over the edge of Salbert's Eyrie. It was a sinking long way down to the hidden valley floor.
Don't look then, you puking fool. Take it one step at a time. You can do that, can't you? One bloody step at a time.
The rock-strewn ground at first sloped gradually, deceptively. Beneath his boot heels gravel and loose earth, so that he slipped and slid and skidded, stripping skin from his hands as he grappled stunted bushes and sharp-sided boulders to slow his descent. His eyes stung with sweat and his mouth clogged dry with fear. The air was tangy and fresh, no crowded city smells tainting, flavoring. It struck chill through his thin silk shirt, goose-bumping his sweat-sticky flesh. Further down into the valley he went, and then further still. Every dislodged rock and pebble rang sound and echo from the vast space below and around him. Startled birds took to the air, harshly protesting, or scolded him invisibly from the eyrie's dense encroaching foliage. He reached a small cliff, a sheer-faced drop of some 5 feet that looked to give way first to a sharply sloped terrace, and from there to a natural platform jutting out over the depths of the valley. Most of the platform itself was obscured by shadow and rocky outcrops, but he was sure now he could see the edge of a wheel, tip-tilted into the air. If the carriage had landed anywhere other than the hidden valley floor, it would be there. Beyond the edge of the platform was nothing but empty space and the shrieking of eagles. 5 feet. He'd jumped off walls as high without thinking twice. Jumped laughing. Now, belly down and crawling, he eased himself, feet first and backwards, over the edge, tapping his toes for cracks in the cliff face, burying his ragged, bloody fingernails in the loose shale as he scrabbled for purchase. If he fell, if he fell. Safely down, he had to stop, still holding on to the cliff edge, sucking air, near paralyzed with fright. That sharp little needle had returned and was jabbing, jabbing. His ribs hurt, and his lungs, and his head. All the cuts and scratches on his fingers, his palms, his cheek and his knee burned, bleeding. Time passed. Eventually recovered, the needle withdrawn and his various pains subsided, he let go of the cliff. Turned inch by tiny inch to press his shoulder blades against the rock and look where next to tread. And felt his heart crack wide with grief. So, his eyes had not misled him. It was indeed a wheel, and more than a wheel. It was two wheels, and most of an ornate painted carriage. It was a brown horse, and sundered harness, and a man, and a woman, and a girl. He closed his eyes, choking. Saw a broken mast and another broken man.
Dare,
he whispered.
Oh, dare.
Ice cold to the marrow, shaking, he continued his descent. There was blood everywhere. Much of it spilled from the shattered horse, splashed across the rocks, pooled in the hollows, congealing beneath the stunted, scrubby bushes that clung to life on this last ledge before the dreadful drop to the valley floor. It soaked the air in a scarlet pungency.
Staring over the platform's edge, Asher saw treetops like a carpet and the white specks of birds wheeling. There was no sign of the second carriage horse or coachman Matcha. A fine fellow he was. Had been. Married with two children, son and daughter. Peter was allergic to horses, and Lily had the finest pair of hands on the reins the city had ever seen. Or so said Matcha, her doting father. Despairing, he turned away from the pitiless chasm yawning at his feet and faced instead the death he could see, smell, touch. Bourne was pinned beneath the splintered remnants of the carriage. His long, lean body had been crushed to a thinness, and one side of his face was caved in. He looked as though he wore a bright red wig. Dana lay some 3 feet to his left, impaled through chest and abdomen by branches smashed into javelins. The impact had twisted her so that she lay half on her side, with her fine-boned face turned away. It meant he couldn't see her eyes. He was glad. And Fain, beautiful, brilliant, impossible Fain, had been flung almost to the very edge of the narrow rock shelf. One slender white hand, unmarked, dangled out into space, the diamonds on her fingers catching fire in the sun's sinking light. Her cheek rested on that outstretched arm. She might have been sleeping, only sleeping. Anyone finding her so might think her whole and unharmed, if they did not see the jellied crimson pool beneath her slender torso, or the eerie translucence of her lovely unpowdered face. Her eyes were half open, wholly unseeing. The lashes, darkened by some magic known only to women, thick and long and bewitchingly alluring, as she had been alluring, lay a tracery of shadow upon her delicate skin. There was a fly, crawling between her softly parted lips. For the longest time, he just stood there waiting. In a moment, one of 'em will move. In a moment, one of 'em will breathe, or blink. In a moment, I'll wake up and all this will be nought but a damned stupid ill-born dream. In a moment, he came to understand at last that there were no more moments, that not one of them would move or breathe or blink again, that he was already awake, and this was not a dream. Memories came then, glowing like embers at the heart of a dying fire.
Welcome, Asher. My son speaks so highly of you, I just know we'll be the greatest of friends.
Dana, Queen of Lur, accepting his untutored bow and clumsy greeting as though he'd gifted her with perfumed roses and a diamond beyond price or purchase. Her unconstrained laughter, her listening silences, the way her eyes smiled in even the gravest of moments, a smile that said, I know you, I trust you, trust me. Born, his sallow cheeks silvered with tears.
What does my kingdom hold that I can give you? He is my precious son, and you saved him. For his mother. For me. For us all. You've lost your father, I'm told. I grieve with you. Shall I stand in his stead, Asher? Offer you a father's words of wisdom if ever you need to hear them spoken? May I do that? Let me.
And Fain, who smiled only if she thought it might do some damage, who never knew herself well enough to know that beneath malice lay desire, who was beautiful in every single way, save the one that mattered most. Dead, dead, and dead. Bludgeoned to tearless silence, he stayed with them, until to stay longer would be foolish. Stayed until the cold and dark from the valley floor crept up and over the lip of the ledge and sank icy teeth into his flesh.
until he remembered the last living member of this family, who had yet to be told he was the last. Remembering that, he left them, reluctantly, and slowly climbed back up the side of the mountain. Chapter 2. There were hands to help him over the broken railings at the top of Salbert's eyrie.
"Easy does it," said Pelinoric, holding his elbow with firm fingers. "Catch your breath a moment. Are you all right?"
Bent over and heaving air into his lungs, aware of stinging scrapes and strained muscles, Asher nodded.
"Aye. Where's Matt?" "Minding his own business back at the tower."
Oryk frowned and released his grasp.
"You know, Asher, some folk might say you were mad to climb down the side of the eyrie. I might even be one of them."
"Was it worth the risk?" Breathing easier, he slowly straightened. Some Doranan or other had conjured Glimfire, a floating flotilla of magical lights turned the new night into a pale imitation of day. He looked into the guard captain's shadowed, hatchet face and nodded again.
"Aye."
Oryk's expression tightened. Then the tension left him and he sagged, just a little, and only for a heartbeat.
"We found him."
There was nobody else within earshot. Oryk had set a line of guards to keep everyone away from the eyrie's treacherous edge and further calamity. Beyond them, by the side of the road, clustered a group of agitated Doranan. Staring, Asher recognized Conroy Geralt and Balsman Holes, Lords Daltrey, Hafar, Sorvold, and Boker, Geralt's general council cronies. No sign of Gar or Master Magician Derm, though. Doubtless they'd been rushed back to the palace and the eager bone-bothering of Potha Nix. Further along the road stood two wagons, a fancy Doranan carriage, and one of Oryk's men guarding coils of rope. With a pang of relief he saw Signet, still safely tied. An uneasy silence muffled the scene, broken only by the stamp of a hoof and snatches of sharp speech from the gathered Doranan lords.
"Asher," said Oryk. "Aye," he said. "I found him. The family, any road.
Coachman Matcher's lying at the bottom of the valley, I reckon, along with one of his precious horses."
"And you're certain they're dead?"
He laughed. Was he certain? Red blood and white bone and black flies crawling.
"You want to go see for yourself?"
With a deep sigh, Oryk shook his head.
"Can their bodies be retrieved?"
He shrugged. "Maybe. Reckon it'll take a hefty dose of magic and some luck, though. Their position is precarious. They're on a bit of a ledge sticking out over the valley. You tell me if that be precarious or not."
Swept by a sudden obliterating tide of exhaustion, Asher felt all the blood drain from his face and staggered where he stood.
"Damn," he muttered.
"Easy now," said Pelinoric, once more taking his arm. "You've had a nasty shock."
The captain's kindness was almost his undoing. Grief and rage and a hot, swelling helplessness blurred his sight. He could feel his heart's brutal beating, solid blows against his ribs like the tolling of a funeral drum. The cold night air seared his struggling lungs, and his teeth began to chatter like bones in a breeze. He felt wetness on his cheeks and looked up. Was it raining? No, the starry sky was clear of cloud. And anyway, how could it be raining? Lur's weather worker was dead. Furious, he blinked back the burning tears.
Tears? Fool. Tears were for folks with time on their hands.
A shout went up from the cluster of Doranan dignitaries. Lord Hafar had spotted him. Pointing, he tugged at Conroy Geralt's brocade sleeve. Geralt turned, frowning, mouth open to snap or snarl. Then he saw two. His chin came up, his shoulders braced and his teeth clicked closed. Vibrating with angry self-importance, he broke away from the group. and so revealed its center. Revealed Gar. Awoken to a fragile consciousness, the prince... No, not any longer. Not after today. The king was sitting on a cushioned stool at the side of the road, draped in a blanket with a hasty bandage wound tight about his head. His left arm had been bound hard against his battered body to safeguard the broken collarbone. In his right hand, he held a mug of something steaming and stared into its depths as though it contained all the secrets of the world. Conroy Geralt took another step forward, his jeweled fingers fisted at his sides.
Asher!
The sound of his name rang like a chapel bell calling for silence. The lord's muttering voices faltered, stumbled, stilled, as step by step Asher shrank the distance between himself and his friend, his king. Gar looked up, one pale eyebrow lifted, seeing him, and he realized there was no need for anything so crude as words. The truth was in his tears, still drying amidst the dirt, and the telltale pallor of his cheeks nipped as cold as frostbite. He reached the tangled knot of Dorinan lords, reached Gar, who looked into his rigid face with an air of calm inquiry, a polite patience, an absence of anything more powerful than a mild curiosity. He stopped and dropped to his knees. There was pain as his bones met the unyielding road. It scarcely registered. Hands by his side, shoulders defeated, filthy with dirt and sweat and little smears of other people's blood. He bowed his head. Your Majesty. From the watching lords, gasps, a cry quickly stifled, a sob smothered. Somebody snickered. Asher snapped up his head, disbelieving. Gar was laughing. His face was mirthless and his eyes, but still he laughed. The blanket around his shoulders shivered free. The scarce-touched contents of the mug slopped over its sides to splash dark stains on his ruined breeches. His nose began to run, and then his eyes, tears and mucus reflecting glimfire, glittering like liquid diamonds. And still he laughed. Geralt turned on him.
Stop it! He hissed. You disgrace yourself, sir, and shame our people! Stop it at once, do you hear?
He might as well have saved his breath. Ignoring him, Gar continued to laugh, not stopping until Barsman Holes came close to touch his unhurt shoulder with gentle fingertips.
My boy,
he whispered.
My dear, dear boy. Hush now. Hush.
Like an oaken toy running down its clockwork, the giggles bumped erratically into silence. Asher dragged a kerchief from his pocket and held it out. For some time, the former prince just sat there, staring at the square of blue cotton. Then he took it and wiped his face, handed back the soiled kerchief and said, I want to see them. The lords broke into a babble of protest.
Don't be ridiculous, snapped Conroy Geralt. It's out of the question.
Conroy's right, added Holes, and tried to lay a calming hand on Gar's arm.
Gar shook him free, heedless of the pain, and stood. His expression was ominous.
Truly the idea is most unwise, Holes persisted.
Dear boy, think of the danger. You heard what Potha Nix's assistant said. You need warmth, rest, more rigorous physicking. We must get you indoors immediately. Come now, listen to your elders, Gar. Be wisely guided, and leave this unfortunate place.
The other lords echoed the demand. Asher, aware of Pelin Oryk now standing close behind, grunted to his feet and exchanged uneasy glances with him, as the lords closed ranks about Gar and raised their voices in ever more vehement argument. Gar let the storm of words rage unchecked, seemed almost not to hear his clamoring subjects. His frowning gaze was focused somewhere distant,
pinned to something only he can see. Then, at last, he stirred, lifted his hand. Enough. Ignoring him, the lords continued their clamour. Enough, I said! The lords fell back, shocked, stared at the glimfire flaring from Gar's fingertips as his newly focused gaze swept all their dumbfound faces. Is this how you speak to your king? Conroy Geralt stepped forward.
You presume a title not yet conferred, your highness.
He turned to Asher.
You.
This was no time for lord baiting. Asher bowed.
Sir, Bourne's death is not in doubt.
He shuddered. No, king, queen, and princess, they're all dead down there. Grief rippled through the Dorinan. Geralt, the only one unmoved, stared at him with eyes like frozen silver. Then he glared at Gar.
Even so, until both councils have met and the proper ceremonies have been observed, you are yet a prince, sir, not a king.
Gar clenched his fingers and the glimfire died. You challenge my claim?
I challenge your presumption. Scant hours have passed since your father's death. Before the succession is settled, there are questions to be asked and answered in the matter of His Majesty's destruction.
What questions? Geralt waved an impatient hand.
This is neither the time nor the...
I disagree, said Gar. It is the only place, and if you don't ask here and now, I swear you never will.
Hulls insinuated himself between them. Gar, Conroyd, please. This is unseemly. The bodies cannot yet be cold. Desist, I implore you, in Baal's...
No, said Gar. I would hear Lord Geralt's question. Geralt's lips thinned in an angry smile.
Very well, since you insist. How is it that you survived the accident barely touched when the rest of your family is so dreadfully perished?
Gar's answering smile was winter cold. You forget Derm.
Our esteemed master magician is unlikely to live through the night. Come the dawn, I warrant there will be only you.
You accuse me of murder, Lord Geralt? Of killing my father, my mother, my sister?
Your unloved sister, said Geralt, who scant days ago tried to kill you.
He nodded at the edge of bandage peeping beyond Gar's shirt cuff.
I believe the wound is yet unhealed.
So, Conroyd, you are a man who listens to servants' gossip, said Gar. How disappointing.
Geralt's face darkened. It pleases you to insult me. Very well. But how long will your arrogance last once I have undertaken inquiries as to precisely how this accident unfolded? When I...
As to that, my lord, said Pellin Orric, any investigation into these deaths falls to me. As captain of the city, it is my right and my responsibility.
Indeed, said Geralt, skewering Orric with contempt. And why should I trust your impartiality, or your competence?
Because the late king trusted them, sir,
Orric said quietly.
And if you discover foul play, captain, said Holes, what then?
Orric's hatchet face sharpened. Then I will pursue the murderer to the ends of the kingdom. He or she will find no escape and receive no mercy, regardless of rank, social status, or privilege. Gar nodded. Satisfied, Conroyd? Good. Now, if you'll move aside, I intend to visit a while with my family. Alarmed and helpless, Asher watched Gar take two staggering steps toward the edge of the eyrie. Unbidden, Lords Daltrey and Sorvold reached for his arms in an effort to restrain him. It was a mistake.
Let be!
Gar shouted. A golden light shimmered into life around him. The lords, unwisely touching him, cried out and snatched their hands away. Conroy Geralt's hand went to the sheathed knife on his hip.
You see? He demanded. He uses magic as a weapon. Prince Gar is unfit for any kind of authority. He knows nothing about being a true Dorinan. He is a precocious, undisciplined child who cannot be trusted with the power so newly come upon him.
You're the one who can't be trusted, Gar spat. All your life you've coveted my father's throne, and now he's dead and you think to take it. Well, think again, Conroyd. There was more kingship in my father's little finger than you possess in all your body. I'll see this kingdom a smoking ruin before ever I see you on its throne.
Geralt raised a shaking fist.
Just like your father, you overstep all bounds. Magic or no magic, you're not fit to rule. You're nothing but the unnatural offspring of a selfish and short-sighted fool.
Gar's golden aura deepened, flared crimson like a fire-fed fresh fuel. Geralt was forced half a pace backwards.
Stand in Justice Hall and say that, Conroyd, Gar whispered. I dare you. Stand in Justice Hall and see what the people reply.
Conroyd Geralt sneered.
The people? That undisciplined rabble of Olkin? That's who you'd call for your support? You wretched boy. If they are all you can rely upon, then...
Dismayed, Asher jumped as Pelin Auric leaned close and whispered urgently,
Do something, Asher, quick, before the fools go too far.
Me?
He stared.
Why me?
Because you're the only one here the prince will listen to.
Gar was shaking, his face screwed up against every kind of pain.
Is this disaster your doing, Conroyd? Is your appetite for power so ravenous you'd kill to feed it? My father, my mother.
Kill your mother?
Heedless of Gar's crimson mantle of power, of his torn flesh and broken bone, Geralt grabbed him by the shirt front and dragged him to his toe tips.
You pathetic little worm, I loved your mother, he cried. I love her still. If she'd married me, she'd be alive this minute. If she'd married me, I'd have given her a real prince, a son she could be proud of.
My lords, shouted Asher, and threw himself at Geralt, snatched at the incensed man's hands and dragged them free of Gar's shirt, then shoved Gar in the chest, heedless of the danger, sending him staggering back 2 paces.
For shame, sirs, both of you! The royal family dead, and you brawling like drunken sots in an alehouse.
Geralt turned on him, snarling.
Lay hands on me again, and I'll see you strung from a gibbet before sunrise.
Hulls chimed in, parchment grey with distress.
No, Conroyd, no. The boy's right. You must control yourselves. This dreadful business. Set an example.
The elderly cleric's eyes were full of tears. Behind him, the other Dorinan lords dithered, paralyzed by protocol and surprise.
His Highness is overwrought. He spoke out of grief and shock. You can't think he'd believe that you, that anyone, would deliberately harm our king and his family. And you, Conroyd, you spoke unthinking too. This terrible tragedy. We are all of us in dreadful disarray. Your Highness.
The crimson glow around Gar was fading fast. His face had emptied too, of fury, of passion, leaving only pain. He looked confused, bewildered.
My lords, I don't... I feel...
An enormous shudder racked him head to foot, and he blanched, dead white.
Baal, help me,
he murmured, as his eyes rolled back in his head. Asher leapt and caught him before he thudded to the road.
Gar!
The prince was a sprawling dead weight. He had to let him go, let him sag to the ground despite his wounds and broken bone.
His Highness shouldn't be here,
Asher said to Holes, as the cleric knelt and took Gar's unharmed wrist to chafe.
He needs to go home.
He needs a good physicking first, said Holes, and looked about him. Conroyd?
Without a word, Geralt came forward, dropped to one knee, slipped his arms beneath Gar and stood easily, the prince cradled against his chest.
Into the carriage with him, Conroyd, said Holes,
regaining his feet with Asher's help.
He must be seen by Nix as soon as possible. The rest of us will have to make do in one of the wagons. I'm sure the experience won't kill us.
Realizing what he'd said, he flinched.
You ain't going back with him? Said Asher, surprised.
Holes shook his head.
No, no. There are things to do here first. A shrine. A prayer candle. I brought all the necessaries with me.
Asher nodded. Reckon Gar'll appreciate that. And the king.
Yes. Well.
For a moment, fresh grief threatened. Then Holes mastered himself and flapped a hand at Geralt.
Don't just stand there, Conroyd. Go!
Trailing after them, Asher waited until Gar was stowed safe and silent in the lushly upholstered vehicle with Conroyd Geralt by his side.
Take His Highness to the palace infirmary, my lord, he said as the carriage door was pulled shut between them. I reckon Nix must be waiting for him on pins and needles.
Geralt's handsome face was all sharp lines and smooth planes, cold, remote, like the flatlands in the depths of winter.
Yes, I expect he is.
My lord,
Asher hesitated, then plunged on.
I can't believe this weren't a terrible accident, but if Captain Auric finds otherwise, you have to know. Gar ain't the one responsible.
For a little while, Geralt sat in continued silence. Then he turned his head, just enough, and met Asher's gaze directly.
Nor am I.
Asher nodded, lied.
I believe you, sir.
Geralt's look was icy enough to freeze a man solid where he stood.
And what makes you think I give one good damn about what you do or don't believe?
His hand slapped the carriage door's painted panel.
Coachman! To the tower!
Pellin Auric patted Asher's shoulder as he joined him in the middle of the road. Together they watched the glimlit carriage disappear around the first bend.
Well done, Asher, he said. A nasty moment neatly turned. If ever you get tired of life in the prince's employ, I'm sure I could find a place for you in the guard.
I got to go, said Asher. His head was aching so badly he thought it might explode. There's folks back at the tower wondering what's amiss, and probably ready to raise a roof by now.
What are you going to do about the bodies?
Tonight? Auric shrugged.
Nothing. Even with magic and glimfire, it's too dangerous to retrieve them in the dark. I'll leave the lads here to keep watch and return with help at first light.
Cautiously, Asher nodded.
Just one problem with that. You're forgetting Matcher. We got his wife and family sitting at home as we speak, expecting him to walk through the door any minute. And then there's the lads at the palace stables. They'll miss the horses.
Damn, said Pellin Auric.
Yes, all right. Leave it to me. I'll send senior officers. Make sure the news doesn't spread.
Fine, he said, relieved.
So I'll be off then. See you tomorrow sometime.
Auric nodded.
Yes, you will.
Asher trudged away. Signet was anxiously pleased to see him, all snorts and wickers and impatient stamping. Holes conjured a small ball of travelling glimfire to light his way home, and blessed him with unsteady hands.
You serve Barl well tonight, young man,
the cleric said as Asher hauled himself into the saddle.
I shall remember you in my prayers.
Looking down at him, Asher nodded.
Reckon we're all going to need praying for by the time this mess is sorted.
Indeed,
Holes said soberly.
Indeed.
And stood back as Asher clapped his heels to Signet's sides and bounded away. It wasn't till he was long past Geralt's sedately travelling carriage and almost back at the tower that Asher realized he'd spent the last little while giving orders to some of the most powerful Dorinan in the kingdom, and the Dorinan had obeyed him. Arrived at last in the tower stable yard, after handing Signet over to Booth for a rubdown and his mash, he found Matt tending a colt that had kicked its way out of a transport cart and was pin-cushioned with splinters for its trouble. A look and a headshake were all he needed to give the bad news. Matt's face lost some colour, and his hands shook a little as he eased another spike of wood from the injured colt's neck.
"Borrow bless them," he said, dropping the splinter into the basin at his feet. "We'll talk later."
"Aye," said Asher, turning away. Later. It was a short walk from the stables to the tower. Hollow, dreading the confrontations to come, he dragged his feet through the pathway's raked gravel and thought it might be nice to drop down dead of a seizure just about now, so he wouldn't have to open the tower's front door, wouldn't have to go inside, wouldn't have to see the faces of the people he knew were waiting there, for him, for news, waiting to be told not to worry. It were all a false alarm, waiting in vain. The tower's front doors stood slightly ajar. He took a deep breath, wrapped his fingers around each brass handle, pushed hard and stepped inside.
"I sent everyone home," said Darren,
rising from his chair at the foot of the staircase.
"It seemed pointless to keep them loitering about here for hours on end."
"Pointless," Asher said slowly, shoving the doors shut behind him.
"Aye."
Fingers laced precisely across his concave middle, Darren took 3 steps forward, then stopped.
"Well?"
Anyone who didn't know him would think he was in complete control of his emotions.
"Is he dead?"
Adrift in the middle of the empty foyer, Asher blinked.
"No."
All of a sudden, he was feeling very tired. He needed a chair. Hadn't there been more chairs in here this morning?
"Just banged up a bit. Geralt's taken him to see Pother Nix now." "Lord Geralt," said Darren automatically.
"Asher?"
He dragged his sagging eyelids open.
"What?
Is anybody dead?"
He turned away. The maggoty old fool was going to spare when he heard.
"Asher."
Turning back, he shoved his hands into his pockets, forced himself to look into Darren's haggard face.
"Not Derm. Derm's alive. Or he was when I saw him last."
He shrugged.
"Just." "I don't care about Derm," said Darren.
"You should. 'Cause if he don't pull through and speak up for Gar's magic, I reckon we're in a mess of trouble."
Darren hardly seemed to hear him.
"Who else? You said not Derm. Very well. Who else lives, aside from him and Gar?"
It was the first time he'd ever heard the old scarecrow refer to Gar as anything other than the Prince or His Highness.